The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Welcome back to Nashville. What a busy afternoon it has been. We talked to Clark Lee and Kansas Story. We'll talk to Daniel Diermeier, the chancellor at Vanderbilt. We don't get a chance to talk to too many chancellors, but we will talk to him. He probably has no idea what he's getting into. Let's talk to Cole Kubik, who does know what he's getting into. He is down in Baton Rouge getting ready for prime time tomorrow night between Southern and LSU. Cole, we were talking to Jordan earlier, and he's throwing a fit. Now, really predictable for Jordan about not being able to see film of Southern. Has that ruined your week as well?
It ruined my week until I came across with this right here, a little secret that I have. We won't tell Jordan about that, but I may have come across that Southern film that we'll be diving into tonight. So don't tell him, but I'll probably be FaceTiming him later and letting him stare at the screen while I go through it a little while.
Before we get to some of the games of the week, you and Greg host of the morning show, of course, on WJOX in Birmingham, I was with you earlier in the week, but what's it been like all week? What has been the topic du jour?
Yeah, it's interesting, Paul, because we started out going Alabama-Texas heavy. I thought that was going to carry us through the week, and we have discussed it and mentioned it each and every day, but I think most Alabama fans have just gotten to the point now where I don't want to say they're disinterested, because I think historically this is a fantastic game, and we've all talked about wanting to get some of these big non-conference matchups back on campus, the home and homes, and obviously Texas coming to the SEC raises the stakes a little bit, but there are just not too many people that can find ways that Texas is going to win this football game or really be competitive for four quarters. I will say today, even Greg and a couple other people started bringing up a couple of games from Alabama's past, Ohio State a couple of years ago in the playoffs, Texas A&M last year saying, oh, it's really starting to feel like that game. I don't feel like that, Paul. I don't think the game will be competitive for very long. I think it's one Alabama walks away from. But we've tried to force feed fans that topic, and I think they're just a little burned out on it, kind of like that orange that they're going to be facing tomorrow, and they just don't think that this is going to be too much of a game.
Cole, I agree, and I find it sad because this is one of the – I mean, you can't do any better than this, really, in terms of national powers. And I remember being out there in Pasadena at the end of the 2009 season, and you had two of the loudest, proudest, and I'll leave a couple of other words out, fan bases in the country, and it's just really. I mean, I've had people at the airport this morning. Everybody's, hey, you going to Austin? And it's not like sometimes you try to. Well, I'll get there. I mean, You don't even have to try to make believe. I mean, I really don't care about going.
I had five Bama fans at the Birmingham airport ask me, "Oh, you heading to Austin yesterday at the airport?" And I was thinking, "Hold on, what?" No, I won't be there. But this is how bored we got with that topic this week, Paul. I actually gave Greg a segment to relive the 2010 BCS National Championship game against Texas and just kind of take us through it. And
oh, my goodness.
Obviously,
everybody in America has heard that before by now.
Paul, you should have heard him describing his handoffs to the left, his handoffs to the right, his tosses to the right, his sacks that he took. Oh, it was beautiful radio. Let me just tell you, to give McElroy 15 minutes of talking about how many times Richardson and Ingram were handed the football.
I mean, there was a I'm trying to remember. I think it was called Game Changer. There was a documentary, which somehow I went to the world premiere of in Hoover, by the way. Not too many world premieres at the Hoover theaters. I mean, everyone who wanted to know about that game by now, Cole, has – either has the tape, has the documentary, or has heard McElroy talk about it.
No, I think it's hard for us, Paul, to go back and remember, and you obviously know this better than anybody, sort of where Alabama was at that time. It may have even been a little bit ahead of schedule of what a lot of people thought Nick Saban was going to be able to accomplish. And such a dominant defensive performance with Rolando McClain and Marcel Darius and those guys. And like I mentioned, that Alabama offensive line was dominant behind Mike Johnson and a couple other guys. Obviously, Greg, Julio Jones, Mark Ingram. I mean, the list goes on of guys who are not household names within Alabama football. But they weren't the team that everybody thought they were going to be year in, year out like they are now. And Texas had been there. Obviously, we know what they did in the Rose Bowl. We know how Mac Brown had it going. And when you look at the numbers from 2000 to 2009, Texas had the number two win percentage in all of college football. I think Alabama was 36th. And now, from then until now, Alabama's been number one by far, and Texas is down in the 50s. So it's been a stark contrast since that game was played, and it's just because of Nick Saban's dominance, it's very difficult for us to sort of imagine that that was even going to be a competitive game, or that was a game, a stage that those two teams even belonged on at that point in time.
No, Cole, you know, I mean, I could, if, and both of us could if we had to, because we've been there to these games, remember all the national championships. But that game stands out to me because, and it was just, it had been so long, number one. It was just such a special season. But most of all, if I could go ahead and admit it here to you, only to you, it was the arrogance of the Texas fans all week in California. It was unlike anything I'd ever encountered. Well, with one exception, the Miami fans in 92. And you find yourself just saying, I mean, please, I mean, Greg, have a good game. Do something. Just beat these guys and shut them up. And, of course, they haven't been heard from since.
No, and that was one thing that was interesting that we did get into when Greg and I talked about it on the show was the whole if Colt wouldn't have gotten hurt. Now I see Ryan McGee's got his article out on at ESPN.com today, and it's been obviously a topic of conversation. Everybody's asking it. Everybody's wondered what would have happened. But Greg brought up a good point. Paul, they didn't even play a really good game because I went and tried to pull some highlights. I could only find one completion that Greg threw, by the way, to actually air on the show and wanted to kind of show people how the game went and what it was like. It wasn't Alabama's best game of the season. It wasn't a completely dominant performance by Alabama. So Greg brought up the counterpoint to what if Colt wouldn't have gotten hurt to what if we would have been in our A game that night, which it could have been complete domination that night. So I agree with you, though. When you put those two helmets next to one another, there are not many more traditions in college football. They're going to be greater and two more prouder fan bases. So just to have them on the same field is going to be cool. I do think that Sark will have a few things. I think Quinn Ewers and company, Bijan Robinson, they're going to get the ball out quickly. I think they might try some things of not even blocking Will Anderson. I think Pete Golding will have a few different looks to try to mess with Sark that he hasn't seen before. Maybe with all three of those outside linebackers on the field at the same time. But it's the other side of the ball, Paul, that I get really concerned about for Texas. There are just not many household names on that side of the football. When I'm talking about the Texas defense, who's going to take over that game? Who's ultimately going to be problematic for Bryce Young and that Alabama offense? That's what I just don't see. Not many stops from Texas in this game. And one reason, I just don't think it'll ultimately be very competitive.
With Cole Cuba, Cole, we've hashed out so many games already, but I want to ask you about a game we haven't touched on, and just primarily to get your thoughts on the quarterback situation at Auburn, a week away from really the first major test of the season. What are you seeing and what are you hearing about that?
Well, I don't think it's a quarterback competition right now, Paul. I think it is a system where T.J. Finley's a starter, and Robbie Ashford is going to give you a changeup. Essentially, if Auburn's offense were a pitcher, T.J. Finley would be the fastball, and Robbie Ashford would be your changeup. He can come in and be your knuckleball or your curveball. He gives you dynamic speed. He gives you big play capability with his legs. He just doesn't know the entire offense right now. Or I should say he can't manage it the way that T.J. Finley can. When you're talking about getting into different protections, understand just how to line guys up, who to send in motion, how to shift an offense. He's not as capable as T.J. Finley right now, but we've seen just in one sample size of a couple quarters of football, he could add something different. And Brian Harsin told us back in the spring, I had that spring game, Robbie Ashford will play. He's going to have a package of plays. Now, maybe in the spring it was that many, and now it's this many or even more, and I think it'll continue to grow throughout the course of the season because let's just face it, Robbie Ashford can help Auburn win football games. So I don't view it as any sort of a problem, any sort of an issue right now. I think Robbie knows where he is. I think that coaching staff is proud of how far he's come. But T.J. Finley is just capable of more within the entire scope of the offense. But this is a really good test, Paul. I think going from Mercer to San Jose State is a good test. You look at that front seven, six starters back on defense for San Jose State, 42. Viliami Fehoko, defensive end, is going to be one guy that can cause some problems. You've got Noah Wright, 6'5", 315-pound nose guard. That'll give new center Tate Johnson a really nice test to kind of see where he is. So I thought that offensive line exceeded expectations last week. They'll get the run game going. Both quarterbacks will play. But as for now, T.J. Finley is still the starter, and Robbie Ashford is a complimentary player in that Auburn offense.
Couple more minutes with Cole. Cole, let's go to Gainesville for a second, because this is going to be a game that really tells a lot of stories. Give us your snapshot of Kentucky and Florida.
Goodness gracious, how much this has changed in 2 weeks. Honestly, Paul, if you and I were talking about this game going into the season, I would have a completely different conversation with you than I will today. I saw something from the Florida Gators last week on film that I have not seen in damn near a decade. Offensive linemen, flat back, coming off the ball, hip to hip, shoulder to shoulder, working combination blocks, actually getting movement on defensive linemen at the point of attack. It just gives you an idea of what Billy Napier and his staff have gone in there and done, and it has been remarkable. I did not expect to see it this year. I didn't think they had the guys and they would be capable of it, but they showed it last week. And that doesn't mean they're 95 Nebraska, but that offensive line showed me that they are now capable of doing some things that I was not sure they were going to be able to do. Conversely, that Kentucky offensive line did not look like the big blue wall that we have seen the last four or five seasons. And I'm a little concerned, especially about the tackle position there. Potentially some movement with that spot on that Kentucky offensive line. Brenton Cox Jr. and company, the front seven for Florida, had a really nice day against a very physical Utah team. Concerned about that Kentucky offense, Paul. And they got good contribution for the wide receiver position. That was another big question. But if you're asking me to battle the trenches right now, I didn't think I'd say this maybe for the next few years. It's advantage Florida, and I'm very surprised that I'm saying that going into this game.
What an interesting conversation. Just a phenomenal conversation overall with Cole. Cole, thank you for making time for us here on a Friday afternoon as we head to the break here. We will include some phone calls in a few minutes at 855-242-7285. We still have the chancellor at Vanderbilt University ahead, and we'll also make our way to a number of other game sites to get you ready for week two of the college football season.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And welcome back live in Nashville on a Friday afternoon, and we are getting you ready for the weekend. And one of the questions that really hasn't been that big of a question, because everyone believed that it would have this result, including our conversation with Mark Stoops, but ESPN is reporting right now that Chris Rodriguez will miss his second straight game while awaiting a ruling from the NCAA. So when Mark Stoops said to us Wednesday night that it was out of his hands, clearly that's what he was referring to. I don't think anybody on the Florida side thought he would be in the game. Ben Watson joining us. Benjamin, they could use him, yeah, but he's not going to play.
Could definitely use him, man. It's interesting when you hear coaches talk about that, because they always talk about, you know, I'm going to coach the players that I have.
Right.
I think that for coaches, this is not anything that is foreign to them. In position meetings, they always talk about coaching the guys that are going to play. But it does matter when it comes to Saturday, because this is a Kentucky team that rushed the ball for about 30-something yards in the last game. I mean, rushing the ball is what they do, and to miss a guy of that caliber is going to hurt that team, especially going against a Florida defense that gives up a lot on the ground.
Yeah, Cole said it a minute ago, and I think it's just pretty obvious now that it's hard to imagine a game that has changed direction as much as this one in just a short period of time.
Was it like four of the last five or something that been decided within like 11 points? So there's been some really, really close games. I think from a recruiting standpoint, you've also started to see a little bit of parity there where at one time, you know, Florida's by lights out and away far – you know, away from Kentucky when it came to recruiting. There have been some battles, and I think that for Kentucky, this is an important game, not only for their brand, but, you know, not to bring up the feud between football and basketball.
Why not, right?
But if you're going to be that team, that football school, I think that this game is really important for you.
Yeah, I mean, Stoops told us the other night that was old news, but we're talking about it.
It might be because other people are talking about it.
Well, it's important because – if Kentucky loses this game, it's almost going to prove John Calipari correct because the interest in the program will start to wane because you tell me, with one loss down, how did they get back into this thing?
Yeah, and
it's pretty obvious they beat Georgia.
Well, yeah, but I'm not gonna pick that for a number of reasons
Nobody can
talk about. But, you know, we look at Kentucky. Look, there's a lot of optimism. There was a lot of optimism. I think there's still a reason to be optimistic. Look, Will Levis is dynamic. You know, he's thrown 14 interceptions, though, in his 14 starts, so that's a problem. But outside of that, I mean, the kid does everything. He's projected to be a high-round pick, first-round pick, so there's some excitement there. But I do think – and it's crazy how narratives change within, like, 2 weeks. Like, we're not even having this conversation about Kentucky, Paul, if – what happened with Florida in Gainesville didn't happen against that Utah team.
It's the other way around.
Exactly. Or if Cam Rising, you know, hits the player, you know, instead of there being an interception at the very end of that game, we're not even having this type of a conversation.
No, my
but
friend,
that's why it's fun.
My friend Buddy Martin, who covers the team down there, he's a publisher of the most read, I think it's a Gator Bait. Isn't everything down there Gator Bait?
yes.
I mean, he was telling me earlier that the enthusiasm is now insane. The optimism is through the roof. And this is a program I remember sitting with Doering at Media Days, and he said, man, the Florida fans just can't get out of the way of the team. I mean, there's so much second-guessing Billy Napier. I mean, but that's the place we live.
It is. And I'll go back to that game, Paul. You know, it's a play here. It's a play there. I think that that's what's exciting about college football or sports in general is that you can look at a game and say, look, if this goes this way, look, on that last, that two-minute drive that Anthony Richardson leads the team on to go down and score, Trevor Etienne fumbles the ball.
Yeah.
And it bounces back to – if that ball doesn't bounce back to him, we're having a totally different conversation. I will say this, however. Anthony Richardson is, I would say, better than advertised.
Yeah.
I think for me, there were a lot of questions about his handling of the offense. Would he be able to operate this new offense with Billy Napier coming in? I think he answered a lot of those questions. Would love to see him develop, pushing the ball downfield in different ways. But as far as a dynamic player, an explosive player that can do everything and you got to keep the ball in his hands, a guy that can call his own number in college football to win, that's what you need, and Florida has it.
There's a million games. Well, there aren't a million games tomorrow, but there are a lot of
games
tomorrow.
We're not going to be looking at a million, but it's going to feel like
a million. Let's move Kentucky and Florida off. What game on the SEC slate are you locked into because like this game, the narrative could really change one of the teams.
I look at that Arkansas game. I look at Arkansas and South Carolina, and you know, a lot of transfers this year. It was like the year of the transfer in the year of the quarterback. And you look at a Spencer Rattler and a guy who was a great player where he was. Things didn't work out. He comes to South Carolina. You look at his game last week. He made some incredible throws. He had a couple inerrant ones. One was an interception, but there's a lot of hope there for them to have some stability at that position where they didn't last year, and there was still excitement in Columbia. But Arkansas is a team that I think that I picked to finish second in the SEC West.
Ooh.
And for them, the target is – you know, we talk about a target. They're not surprising anybody anymore.
No.
KJ Jefferson, we know what he can do. That O-line, Sam Pittman is really the recruiting. And because he's an O-line coach, has built a juggernaut when it comes to running the football. Nobody ran the ball better than they did last year in the SEC. But I think this is a game that is somewhat of a mini statement game, a game that they need to win against an up-and-comer in the East. in South Carolina. And look, special teams. I feel like Beamer always has something special about his special teams. Maybe it's in his name. I think it's in his bloodline. It's in his DNA.
Going on a long time before you were born.
Exactly. So that has to happen. But I think that game right there is what I'm really interested in.
Yeah, and we were out there last Saturday morning, and there was a lot of enthusiasm. But there's almost this feeling that, well, that was expected. And they beat a team that, I don't know, I vaguely remember seeing them a couple of months ago. Yeah. And I realize it's not the same team, but it's still a really good program.
It's a great program.
Arkansas didn't get much credit for beating.
With the coach who was there, you know, in the playoffs, yeah. And Fickell. And I tell you, you know this, there's something about a team that comes into your house, out of your conference, but it's not intimidated by you.
Right.
And so I didn't expect for Cincinnati to be intimidated. They were in the playoffs last year. They're a solid football team with a lot of good football players, and Arkansas weathered the storm and won that game. I think that did a lot for their confidence.
Great stuff with Benjamin Watson, who was out with us this week because we got people going in all different directions. So
yeah.
It's great to have you
it's
here.
It's good to sit with you. I'm usually listening to you honestly while I'm walking around the neighborhood, getting my steps in for the day. So it's good to actually sit with you right now.
It's a good neighborhood to walk around. I
walk around my neighborhood all the time, get a couple miles in because, you know, when you're retired, you got to keep the body moving, man.
Retired and just a couple of little ones at home that give you all kinds of opportunity not to sleep.
A couple is two. seven is a tribe. So, yeah, we have a small tribe.
Great to have you here. And thanks for listening.
We're trying to
build this show one listener at a time. Benjamin Watson joining us. We have a chance to talk to you in a minute. We haven't had too many caller segments, but we have one around the corner. Give us a ring.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we are back looking inside the stadium here. For those of you watching, it's been quite an afternoon. We're an hour away from a conversation with the chancellor at Vanderbilt University, a distinguished chancellor indeed. And we've already talked to the head football coach and the athletic director. We'll talk to Chancellor Daniel Diermeier later in the program. Let's get to the calls here. And Pat starts it off in Georgia. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Paul, thanks. Listen, I'm sitting here on a late Friday afternoon. I'm sipping on a scotch and soda, and I'm talking to Paul Feinbaum on the telephone, and the fragrant aroma of boiled peanuts on the burner is wafting through the downstairs. That's
wow.
A good way to start off. That's a great way to start off a college football weekend.
I would say boiled peanuts and college football tend to go pretty well together, Pat.
No, absolutely. Listen, Georgia's finally got the depths that we need, and Kirby Smart has worked 5-6 years on it. We've had great recruiting classes, and we had 15 people go last year. We're not rebuilding, we just reload, and it's been a hard time getting here, and we're here, and it was evident last weekend, and we've got an opportunity at 4:00 tomorrow with Samford to keep working on that, and I mean, I just think Georgia has arrived, and it's been a hard row, but I'm so glad we're here. We're playing South Carolina at noon next week. I'm glad we're not playing at night. I've been at Williams-Brice at night. It's as good for South Carolina as LSU Stadium, in my opinion.
No, I agree with you on that, Pat. It's a very dangerous place. So South Carolina did not get any favors. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate that. Jack is up next. Jack, welcome to the show on this Friday afternoon. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
How much we enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I want to tell you a little bit about something you've been a part of in Selma, Alabama. It's about our Selma Quarterback Club. How about that?
What a great club.
You spoke there a couple of times, right?
Well, yeah, and you're gonna you'll probably chuckle when I say this. For those who don't know, Larry Striplin was the unofficial mayor of Selma, and when he called you and asked you to come down there, it didn't matter whether you were in the middle of about to have surgery or you showed up. And I'm sure you remember Larry. And I called him once, told him I had to back out because something had come up, and he refused to let me back out. That's how much I remember that club.
Hey, Paul, that's so true. He was the man for us getting speakers and all. Listen, I want to tell you something right quick, like, and I know you push for time this afternoon, but our little quarterback club in Selma, we got an endowment at the University of Alabama for the tune of $277,000.
Oh, my.
And we got an endowment at Auburn University for $150,000. I just thought that that was mighty big for us. And we gave the same amount to both clubs, but Alabama matched us $127,000.
That is really, Jack, how long have you been part of the club?
Since back in the 90s.
Okay.
1990-something.
I'll tell you a quick story that you may remember. So I came down there. I had an interaction in Selma, literally the first big story I ever wrote. I went down there for
when did Kenny hit Stabler and Henry Fitzgerald tell about?
Exactly. So here's
Please
what happened.
Tell it.
And
that's so funny.
So I mean, it's the first time I had been back, and I let me assure you, I was a little bit apprehensive because Henry had threatened to sue me, and I had written about I'd gone to after hanging around with Kenny all night, you know, driving through stop signs and throwing beer cans out the window.
Exactly.
And my favorite line in the article is I was with Henry, and I said, Henry, we're drinking in the car, and we just ran through five stoplights. He said, don't worry about it, boy. He said, I'm the city attorney here. I can do whatever I want. And by the way, I put all that in the article. And we went to some club, and Joe Smitherman was running for reelection. For those who don't know, Joe was in the middle of the civil rights movement in Selma. And so anyway, speeded up a couple of years, and I wrote a bunch of stuff that I would never do today. So I'm speaking to the group, and as it ends, all of a sudden two city policemen walk in with Joe Smitherman, and they start walking up to me with handcuffs, and they slap the handcuffs on me.
That's so funny.
And knowing a little bit about Selma's history and knowing what I thought they were serious. So they hauled me off, and the place just cracked up. And Henry and I later became very, very good friends. I know he just passed away recently, and he was such a – I got to become very – he was a wonderful guy, but that was my introduction to the Selma Quarterback Club.
Exactly. Henry Fitz was a real known well guy here, and I told him about you telling the story again earlier just before he passed away, and he was in the men's locker room, and, oh, Lord, he told his side of it. It was hilarious. Everybody in there rolling.
Well, the funniest thing, so we one more thing, we go to – I can't remember. I remember this from 40 years ago, but we go to Henry's house. I mean, it's just one of the 15 places we stopped to drink that night, and you'll get a kick out of this. So he said, now, Paul – this is my wife's sister. I said, Henry, your wife's sister. He said, not my wife's sister, my wife's sister. Her name was, I guess her name was Sister, but he said it's Sister. And anyway, it's a night that I will never forget. Thanks for bringing that club up. It's very special to me.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, the remainder of calling is trying to get a speaker for the quarterback club. Could we interest you in coming back down?
Well, after all this, I can't say no. I tell you what, why don't we have a conversation off the air, and let me see if I can do it.
Sure.
Because it would be
pretty good.
Let me put you on hold, and I'll leave your number, and I'll give you a call, and we'll see what we can do. Thank you for the call. I've already given away half the speech, so I don't know what I'll talk about. We will take a break. We have a long way to go here. We're an hour and 20 minutes away from the end of the show, and we still have Matt Stinchcomb coming up. We've got the Vanderbilt Chancellor, and no more Selma quarterback club jokes.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. We still have an hour and change. Marty Smith will join us at the top of the next hour. Chris Doering, a regular on Friday afternoon, and something we don't often get, but we always enjoy, the chancellor of Vanderbilt, fairly new chancellor, Daniel Diermeier, joining us. How about that? Last night we had the president of Mississippi State, tonight the chancellor. And who said this show doesn't raise the level of intelligence in America? Matt Stinchcomb joining us.
I never said that, Paul.
Always one of our smarter analysts. So we need you in a couple of minutes when the chancellor gets by. Just to think of, great to have you on, Matt. You're doing the game tomorrow between Samford and Georgia, and we haven't really spent too much time today looking ahead to Georgia, but I would be curious your thoughts on what everybody thought was a pretty spectacular opening game for the Dogs.
Yeah, it was as dominating as you could put together a football game. I mean, really, offensively, to go 7 of your first 7 in the end zone, that's pretty sporty. Always a good way to start the season. And I do think that they anticipated having a good bit more resistance and more to coach to from a game film standpoint. It wasn't perfect by any stretch, but they didn't face a whole lot of adversity in that football game. Let's be honest. I mean, they did move the football to the Oregon Ducks a little bit defensively. They were opportunistic, got some takeaways, ultimately got some stops. But otherwise, there was very little to overcome, frankly. I mean, there's a couple of down and distance scenarios where you were 3rd and 10+, got behind in the sticks due to a personal foul at one point in time on one of the offensive possessions. But outside of those scenarios, there were very few to any negative yardage plays. I think Oregon only got into Georgia territory 3 times. So it was a complete victory. And the challenge, of course, that they will point out, and any great team would, is that the ability to persist in playing to a standard despite what the in-game circumstances are, or even what challenges your upcoming schedule might provide.
Matt, let's look around the SEC tomorrow, and certainly the game that's getting a lot of buzz in the league is Kentucky and Florida, and we are now getting reporting from ESPN that Rodriguez will not play. I know that doesn't surprise anyone watching or listening, but lay this game out for us, because it really has our perception has changed. Whether the final score changes or not, we don't know, but everyone thinks they know what's going to happen here.
Well, I'll tell you what, my perception has completely changed. I mean, the circumstances of that game and the personnel availability, and couple that with the way Florida was able to play in week 1 versus what is thought to be one of the best teams in the Pac-12. And I think ultimately Utah will prove to be that. But they're also thought to be a very physical football team. And what I saw from Florida, especially up front, was their lines of scrimmage more than holding their own, and the ability to rush the football. And I'm not talking about just Richardson's ability to pull the ball, tuck it, and run it. I'm talking about the ability to actually in-phase run game when you're intending to run the football, hand it off, toss it, and they're able to pick up positive yards. And couple that with the way the Gators play in the opener, obviously great home field advantage. The Swamp's one of the toughest places to play in the country. That certainly played a role in that victory. It'll be a role in the game tomorrow versus Kentucky. But the way Florida played, you know, wire to wire, you know, to the final whistle, the fact that they secured that victory in the manner that they did, especially in light of the way the last season ended, you know, all of those signs are incredibly positive, especially this early under Billy Napier. You get a statement win in week 1, and you're now facing a team that, while they were 1-0, they did not play well along the line of scrimmage, especially on the offensive front, did Kentucky. Struggled to protect, did not run the football, ran for 50 yards last week. I mean, they ran for more yards versus that Georgia defense a season ago than they did in week 1. None of that is very positive, to say the least. Now, were they vanilla? Yeah, they largely were. But there's no question that some of the issues that persisted for Kentucky up front, those are going to be difficult to solve over the course of 1 week. Everything points to the Florida Gators. And I thought they were going to start the season out 0-2. It looks very likely they're going to start the season off 2-0.
Let me ask you about the Tennessee-Pittsburgh game. There's a perception so different than it's been in the past. Tennessee is in really good shape here. We only have one game of both to look at as a sample, but how do you see this one playing out?
Well, it definitely seems as if they've been able to pick up where they left off. And the part that I think is largely a misperception is Tennessee and how they run the football. They rush the football. They're very creative. The tempo also creates multiple opportunities offensively to rip off a ton of plays. But you look at it, and in one weekend, this is an offense that's going to constantly threaten your defense. I mean, even in our meetings today with the Georgia players, they mentioned, you know, how hard they work and pointed out that, you know, Tennessee is one of those teams that's a challenge to prepare for, and it's hard to make it tougher in practice than it is in games because of the tempo at which they play and the proficiency at which they play offensively. This will be a fun game because Pittsburgh's thought to be one of the better defenses returning in the ACC. Obviously a team that was a champion a year ago, a lot of new faces offensively, specifically at wide receiver and quarterback, but Keaton Slovis, he acquitted himself just fine in week one. They seemingly have been able to replace via multiple additions at wide receiver, but it's defensively where the challenge is going to rise the most for the Pittsburgh Panthers. So this is a somewhat of a statement win opportunity for Tennessee early in the season. And also we'll provide some commentary about where the ACC is and how they might project from a more national perspective, if not specific to the ACC conference itself.
Just about 2 minutes remaining. Let me get your thoughts on what's going on in Fayetteville tomorrow, because a lot of what you said could be applied there. South Carolina heading to Arkansas. Both South Carolina has a huge game next week against Georgia. Arkansas has had two really tough games to start the season.
They have, and they were able to battle their way through last week versus Cincinnati. Obviously lost a couple of key contributors defensively, especially in their back end. With Miles Slusher and Jalen Catalan, still able to get that victory. You know, the question for me with Arkansas, this was coming into the season, is while we were all talking about who could upset the top teams in the respective divisions, Alabama in the West, Georgia in the East, there were all kinds of candidates that could beat Georgia perhaps in the SEC East, at least in the preseason perspective, from many. There was very few to anyone that could be pointed towards as far as like who could upset Alabama. And I think Arkansas is a team that could be a candidate for that. Now, whether or not that actually happens is an entirely different conversation, but who is the second best team in the SEC West? I think that there are a few candidates that might not be as likely as we thought they might have been coming into the season, you know, namely in LSU. But I do think that Arkansas could perhaps put a statement out there. And of course, South Carolina, they're going to have to play better than they did versus Georgia State in week one.
Great stuff, Matt Stinchcomb. Really appreciate his time. A lot to do in the final hour. Marty Smith will join us, the Chancellor at Vanderbilt, Chris Doering, and we're coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.